are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And we're also heard on the World Wide Web, all over the planet, I should say.
All over the planet.
Planet Earth.
That's awesome. It is. 1510 WWBC is the dial website, and you can go to that page and actually hit the Listen Live button. Or if you miss the show, you can go back to the archives, which is on that On Demand button. Mondays, each and every Monday here at 1 o'clock, we are on live. So you'll find Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and you can download any of the shows from there. As well, we have them on our website ourselves, which is SitaMediaInc.com. And then we post everything on our Facebook page as well. And such fantastic guests that we've had over the last 13 years. Hard to believe, Sita.
Yes. So, thank you. That was the voice of my co-host, Ellen O'Neill. And we have Ali Tambor with us. She is our resident guest that lives on the show with us. Woo-hoo. She moved in.
She did move in.
I'm so, a little caught in the corner.
Yeah. So today we have an action-packed show. Our board is being run by our friend, Danny Whiting. Danny, thank you for taking my call this morning. Danny. I was concerned about the traffic with the launch and everything. I was like, gosh, I hope we make it to the station on time. But then I found out it was scrubbed and everything was fine.
Everybody left early.
Yes, yeah, yes, exactly. Yes.
So, but congratulations to NASA and all the folks that made the attempt this morning, at least for Artemis 1, which is our first NASA trip to the moon, unmanned this time. But there's a plan for Artemis 2 and Artemis 3 coming up. So make sure you stay tuned right here on the Space Coast. All kinds of fantastic things.
Yeah, we would have had some wonderful history this morning had it occurred. My friend Chelsea is actually one of the systems engineer who worked on the project for Lockheed Martin, and she's a part of the team responsible for all aspects of the Orion spacecraft and this mission that was supposed to take place today. So we've all been watching her Facebook and all the live feeds she's doing, and we're extremely proud of her. But for our guests who are tuning in today, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is on every Monday from 1 to 2, and we speak about kitchen table topics. We heat up the airwaves with things that are going on around the nation right here in Brevard County, Florida, and a lot of socioeconomic issues. And, of course, today's no different. We've got a great show planned today. My friend Rebecca Jones is calling in late on the second part of the show. She is a congressional candidate. And the first segment, we've got my friend who lives in Indiana, where I lived in Indiana for a while in Marion, Indiana. Teddy Magnus Kuhn is on, and she is going to be talking about her book, which I received a copy of the book. It's called You Are Invited to a Garden Party. And the book is all about teamwork and being inclusive and getting others to be involved in a project, kind of like what's going on with the Artemis
project.
Right? So, Teddy, I know you're on the phone, so thank you for taking the time to call in today.
Sita, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm thrilled to be here with you gals.
Oh, my gosh. Your voice is coming across loud and clear, and we are so excited to have you on. Ali and Ellen is here as well, and we were just talking about your book and all the nice words that you use in your book and the glossary and everything. You're amazing. So tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about yourself and why you decided to write a children's book.
Thank you. I'm happy to share my story. I have a disease called myasthenia gravis, and the pandemic forced me to isolate. And I thought, what in the world am I going to do now? At home, isolating. And I thought, oh, I've always wanted to write a children's book. So that was the beginning. And I love words. I love alliteration. I love onomatopoeia. I am part of a family of educators, so I had lots of resources to help me put this book together. It includes, as you said, Sita, a glossary and an educational supplement, which my sister, Ann Mangus Smith, is an award-winning science educator, wrote for the book. And she has been using this book in schools teaching children with the book. It's so exciting.
Yeah, I love the name too, Xenia. I have to ask you how you guys came up with that book. It's just the name. It sounds like a flower. It's so beautiful. The zebras, the zeal of the zebras and Xenia.
Yes, you know, the whole book is based on alliteration and animal groups. And the zeal of zebras, I needed a Z name. And I've always loved Xenia flowers. And I thought, I need a word that's similar to that. So that's how I came up with Xenia the zebra to carry through the alliteration of the book.
Wow. And you introduced us to all these animals, these zoo animals, too, in the book that I had forgotten about, the meerkats. And yeah, and you know how you got them to be involved in this party. It's amazing. It's what children need today, because in school we're seeing where a lot of kids don't know about teamwork and team building and having somebody to manage a project with them.
You're so right. It's all about collaboration and how successful you can be when you help one another and have a common goal that you're working towards. And that's what I like about what I wrote, because as the former human resources director for the Cincinnati Reds, my job was about kindness and teamwork and helping others. And I really wanted to convey that through this book and help to educate children.
Yeah, and you got the moles involved. You got the squirrels involved. And I have to tell you that my husband had an issue once with someone who... a squirrel was stealing their mangoes, and they literally put a cage to catch the squirrels because they didn't want the squirrels to eat the mangoes. And my husband spoke to the gentleman and said, listen, I will buy you 100 mangoes. Please do not imprison this poor squirrel over a mango. It's not right. And as I read the book, I thought about you, and I said, you would never do that to the squirrel.
No. Oh, that's hilarious. I love that story. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So when I read The Garden Party, I could just see everybody gathering the nuts and the berries and, you know, getting together for this party. And I'm like, that kind of sounds like me, how I have my parties, you know, cooking and inviting people. And,
yeah, but you don't steal mangoes.
No, but I mean, you know, the animals have to live, too. The animals have to shine on God's magnificent planet as well. We actually took their habitat from them. So why imprison them like that in a cage for over a mango, you know?
Just until it's ripe.
Yes.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yes.
And, you know, the part that I thought was really fun, too, was closing the zoo for an afternoon so the animals could have a party. I mean, just the thought of them being able to enjoy an afternoon, I don't know, it just really inspired me.
Yeah, they were going to have pizza at the zoo. Even the porcupines were invited.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. Yeah, why should the humans all enjoy the zoo, right? So my friend Allie had a question for you about yourself and what made you write the book.
Hey, it's Allie. I just was asking, could you expand, if you don't mind, as long as it's not too personal, on your myasthenia gravis and... how you're managing that in writing?
Oh, sure. I'm happy to. I've had myasthenia gravis, which is a neuromuscular disease, for over 40 years. And the quick definition is the nerves are normal and the muscles are normal, but the connector between the two is not. So the messages don't get from the nerves to the muscles to make them do what they're supposed to do. So there are no real treatments. There are just medications to help alleviate the symptoms. So I take medication that dampens my immune system because it is an autoimmune disease, and that's why I've had to isolate for 2.5 years. But I had full muscle problems. I would have double vision. I couldn't walk. I couldn't sit. I couldn't talk.
Yeah.
I couldn't swallow. So part of the way to help this disease, besides medication, is rest. So these over 2 years of isolating has really been good for me because I've certainly rested a lot, and it really made it possible for me to research and write this book.
Yeah, and you had to stay safe during the pandemic as well, because people with autoimmune system diseases, they were at high risk. So I'm glad you were able to stay home and get rest. So then, you know, just to transition away a little bit from that, so then I would say that people with your condition certainly benefited from the stimulus package as well.
Yes, yes, I'm sure they did. I am fortunate that I am okay financially, but I know a lot of people really needed help. In that regard.
Well, we were just talking about that as well, just before our show, about the hairdressers and the dishwashers.
Yes.
And the people that did want to be creative but were working full-time, but then all of a sudden everybody is at home and they're bored and going out of their mind.
Yes.
With something to do.
Yes.
And they got creative like you did and wrote a book, or maybe some people open an online business. Some people went on TikTok and became famous and got millions of views just posting a video. But people had to do something because they were home, and they had all these ideas, but some had money and some didn't. And some just had that creative talent like you did, and you wrote your book. So would you say that the autoimmune disease kept you from doing anything in life, having myasthenia gravis?
You know, I was fortunate in that I was able to do what I wanted to do. I just had to make accommodations to be able to accomplish that. I've gotten to travel the world. I got to work in Major League Baseball. I have children and grandchildren and a loving husband. And I've really, I've had a wonderful life. But I have had to make these accommodations in order to thrive.
So
it's been okay.
And how exciting about that career in Major League Baseball? I mean, that's like the wish probably of so many people, to be able to get close to the Cincinnati Reds like that. This is Ellen, by the way. I was a corporate trainer for Home Depot, and we used books like this, even children's books sometimes, about team play, about exactly what you had said before, about how infectious all of that is. So tell us a little bit about your career with in HR, right, you said?
Yes, I was the director of HR for the Cincinnati Reds. And the funny thing is, I had never been to a baseball game in my life.
Sounds like me.
Okay, so I'm not alone.
No.
So I was just never a sporty person. And I never dreamt, I didn't know, that the business of baseball is like any other business, where there is an accounting department and a marketing department and an HR department and a payroll department. And when I got the job of HR director, I absolutely loved it. I mean, the ability to interact with so many people all over the United States collaboratively. Baseball is... there are 29 other teams, and the neat thing is we're all under the umbrella of Major League Baseball. So if I had a question or a problem, I could just call one of the other HR directors for another team and say, hey, how do you handle this situation? And that's what I loved, because all my prior jobs were in private industry, and you don't call a competitor and say, hey, how do you deal with this?
That's
so
true.
Baseball is fantastic. I mean, it's the entertainment business. You meet fantastic people. I traveled all over the United States for baseball. And who, living in the Midwest, who doesn't want to be in Sarasota, Florida in the winter for spring training, or Arizona? I mean, it's fantastic.
Yes, that's awesome. So yes. How much of that experience, of your HR experience and the teamwork aspect, went into the book? I mean, were those thoughts all part of making this book?
Yes, very much so. That's I really wanted to convey kindness, grace, teamwork, collaboration, because the other part, it was my career in human resources, but also dealing with what I call an invisible disease, because nobody knew what I was going through just to walk down the street if I was having a bad day. So what I wanted to try to convey too was kindness, because I really believe that everybody is dealing with something.
Amen to that. Every single day people wake up, they're dealing with something.
Something.
But we can't see it necessarily. So we need to, in my opinion, show some grace and kindness to others, because we have no idea what they're dealing with.
Right. And, you know, I just want our listeners to know who we're speaking with. We're speaking with Teddy Magnus Kuhn, and she is the author of this wonderful book called You Are Invited to a Garden Party. And the book is about Xenia and the zeal of zebras when they closed the zoo for a day to have a private party with them and their animal friends. And I wanted to ask you, you know, in the book, you gave the skunk who happily scuttles away in search of fragrant flowers. And I thought that was funny, because the skunks, you gave them the job to go find the flowers that smell the best. And I'm like, woo!
Well, they should know.
They should know, right? The skunks should know. And, I mean, it's just so amazing how you included every animal, the camels, the skunks, the moles, the zebras. Everybody was invited to this party. And I think it's almost portrays like your life, because maybe at one point in your life too, even in mine, I feel like we want to be included. We want people to include us as well.
Yeah. Oh, definitely, definitely. And working in human resources in Major League Baseball, I mean, there are so many different groups of people, and you want to be inclusive. It's just really important to me, and even from the aspect of men and women, adults and children, just including everyone. I come from a big Greek family, and growing up, everyone was included, the children, the adults, the grandparents, no matter your age or your gender. When we got together, it was everyone got together, and I love that, and that's why I was trying to convey this also in the party.
Yeah, because you had the gaggle of the goose, you had the parrots whistling, the pandemonium of the parrots and the geese, and the cackling of the claws and the crabs. You had everybody. Sound like my big Trinidadian family, too. So that leads me to my next question. Like, what inspired you to write the book, and how did you come up with the idea? Was it because of the family, or a collaboration of your job and wanting everybody to be kind? Something must have happened when you said, I am going to write my book.
Well, I have an uncle who is a West Point graduate, and I remember as a child visiting West Point, watching all the cadets marching in unison in their uniforms, and it really left an impression on me. And the first thing I thought of when I was thinking about writing this book and how I wanted it to be alliterative were the army of ants. And I thought, animal groups, alliteration, let's see who else has an alliterative group name. So I started doing the research, and it was amazing. I loved the caravan of camels and the stench of skunks and the scurry of squirrels, and I just loved the words, and I thought, I think I could write a fun story about this.
It is fun. And how long did it take you to write the book? When did you begin, and how long did it take you to write it?
You know, it took about a year because of the collaboration I had to do virtually with the artist and my sister, the science educator, and then I had to work with a graphic artist. I had a lot of now what should I do moments, because I'd never written a book before, and I could not find a publisher. I couldn't find an agent that was interested. So I thought, okay, I'm going to start my own company. So I decided to start my own LLC to publish the book. And that, again, took time. I had to learn how to copyright, how to get ISBN numbers. You know, it's just been a, actually, from start to finish, it was almost 2 years, but it took a year to write the book.
Yeah, and you even showcased in your book the old tree stump and what the ants are doing back and forth. They actually made like a table out of this tree stump to arrange the flowers and the berries. How amazing, because, you know, we live in a world where people are out with the old and in with the new. But you even found a way to get this old tree stump in the zoo as part of the book and part of the party and get everyone excited.
Definitely. I'm also an artist, and things like an old tree stump really intrigue me, and I wanted to use that. I'm like you. I don't want to necessarily erase everything old. I want to try and reuse it, recycle it, make it important again. So that's why I wanted to use the old tree stump. I wanted to recycle.
Yeah, I see that. And I read somewhere that the person who helped you with the art is actually a Florida artist. Her name is Sherry Gray.
Yes, it's Cheryl Gray, and she is an artist on the panhandle, the 30A area where Santa Rosa Beach is, and I'm an artist, and I met her through an online art group that we participate in, and I loved her style because it's very whimsical, so I just contacted her, didn't know her at all. Contacted her through our art group, it's called Chroma A, and said, hey, would you like to collaborate on a children's book? And she said, okay. And that's how that got started. And I just think she did a great job.
Yeah, and you really use some words in the book that little children could learn and would later help them with their vocabulary as well. I like what you wrote. It was a marvelous view of the festivities. And I'm like, gee, I want to come to that party myself.
to your point, that's why I wanted to be sure and include a glossary, because some of the words are, I'm sure children are not familiar with. So I did want to include a glossary for them as well.
Yeah, right. But what a gentle way to have the young ones pick up a little bit more vocabulary. And the next time one of the little kids says, well, there was just nothing but pandemonium.
Well, yeah.
That would be a really good thing. You know, it's a gentle, loving way to educate.
Right. Imagine a child coming home and saying to their parent, what pandemonium in this house today?
I love it.
That's how it happens. Yeah. That's how it all starts.
I know. One day my granddaughter was about 4 years old and she was jumping up on the furniture. And I said, you know, Madison, I read somewhere where I saw it on CNN where a little kid fell off a couch and had a busted head. And she goes, you know what, Nanny? You fabricate a lot of stuff.
Ooh, there you go.
I was floored. I was like, what the? Oh, my goodness. So I quickly Googled child with stitches on head.
Yeah.
And I found a whole bunch. And I said, here, look, look. Thank God for Google, right? So let's talk a little bit about you. So you live in Indiana. And I told you that that we spent about 3 years in Marion, Indiana. And we have a bit of a connection, Teddy.
Yes. I've been born and raised here in central Indiana and graduate of Ball State University, as are most of my immediate family members, big Ball State alumni here.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the pandemic and being isolated, it was also conducive to book writing because of our weather in Indiana. You know, we still have winter. And we still have lots of gray days and snow and ice. And so it was very conducive to writing a book, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I loved living in Marion, Indiana. And a shout out to all my friends who still live there. I loved when they did the hay rides, and I loved Halloween. And it's so family oriented over there. You know, people, everyone got involved. If a kid had a baseball game, the whole group showed up. Everyone.
Yes,
people
right.
make the time for the activities that the children are involved. And I thought it was good. It kind of reminded me of this party and why this garden party was a success, because part of you still know how it feels to have that teamwork for everyone to get together. And you know, when I read the book and I read about the scurry of the squirrels and the prickle of the porcupines and the husk of the hares, I forgot about what a hare is. And yeah, you put him in your book as well. And they assisted with all the treats for the parties and made it such a success. You even had animals that had entertainment, like the parrots and, and the birds. So tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends where they can find your book. And I tell you, it's such a beautiful cover. You were invited
Thank
to a garden
you.
Party.
Thank you, Sita. It's available on Amazon.com, and it's a great price right now. It's on sale. So I encourage everyone to check it out, and especially educators and those who parents and parents who homeschool, because there is a whole section in the back of the book with lesson plan suggestions that go along with the book.
Yeah. And have you, by you writing the book, I read an article. It says Anderson woman used isolation to write educational children's book. But it also touched a little bit about the autoimmune system disease. And I would imagine that you're also bringing light to that to people with autoimmune system disease like myasthenia gravis and what they can do to help themselves. Do you find yourself doing any kind of public speaking to help others about that one?
I haven't since the pandemic. But prior to the pandemic, I was very active with other people with autoimmune diseases. They would call me and ask, how would I handle something, or who was my favorite doctor that I got the best results from. We have quite a nice network of people with autoimmune diseases, and we speak on Zoom, we speak virtually, on the phone. So it's been, you know, I really feel like I can help people, and I appreciate that, because I like to help people.
Well, Teddy Magnus Kuhn, thank you for unleashing your creativity during the pandemic, because people like me who read the book fell in love with animals all over again, and I promise to do my best to promote teamwork in our world as well.
Here, here.
Sita, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, Teddy, thank you for being with us on our as our guest here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We are going to take a quick station break and listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back after these messages with Rebecca Jones, a candidate for Congress.
They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud 9, that's cloud number 9 furniture.com. again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. Just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. Boy, what a robust section talking about the stench of skunks and talking about zoo animals and teamwork with a good friend from Indiana, Teddy Magnus Kuhn, Ellen.
And I think she has the coolest job ever. She retired from the coolest job ever, HR director for the Cincinnati Reds. I mean, that's got to be epic as far as that goes. And she wasn't even a sports person, so you can imagine somebody who is a sports person getting that job.
I wanted to play the organ at baseball games. You know, that all of that dun 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 that stuff. I wanted to be the one on the organ and get everybody to go. Go, you know, play ball.
It just shows that, you know, we do live in a service-oriented world.
Yes.
And everybody, in some way, plays a part in making the lives of human beings better.
And wanting to help.
Right. And she did that through HR, and she saw the teamwork with the baseball people.
That did nothing but energize her to do more.
And look what they did for the economy there and the people. Like she said, it's a family affair, right?
Indeed.
And so our second segment is with Rebecca Jones for Florida 1st Congressional District. She is a Florida scientist, the whistleblower, and the mother who risked it all to fight corruption in our government. And she talked a little bit about what was going on with COVID-19, you know, and stuff like that. And so she did say she would call in. But of course, you know, she's been busy. Right. So we're hoping that she will, Ellen.
Yes. But let's talk about this is a great time just to talk about the Space Coast right now and this Artemis rocket that's going up.
Yes.
We have, I believe the plan is till 2025. Mm-hmm. And so Artemis 1 was supposed to go up today, but now it's rescheduled for Friday between the window, I think, of 12 and 2 on Friday afternoon.
It has and to then, sync up with the lunar orbit.
Correct.
So it can't just go anywhere.
In lay terms, we need to have a good weather. Yep. That's all we're waiting on.
Well, and we
good
need
weather.
Things not to leak because right. I think there was a fuel leak or something. But the second one is supposed to be a manned rocket, and the third one is also supposed to be a manned rocket. So this should be, once again, epic, epic history being made right here on the Space Coast at Kennedy Space Center. And thank you for all of the folks that have come here from other cities, from other counties, from other states to witness this epic event that's going on right here in Brevard County.
Yeah, that's why it's called the Space Coast.
That's right.
Treasure Coast.
And hopefully great for all the businesses, all the restaurants, and all the service industries that are up in that area that are benefiting from all of our influx of tourism that's happened over
right.
today.
Right. And I have to say, on the phone is my friend, an American hero, scientist, and a mother fighting for honest government, and her name is Rebecca Jones, and she's running for Congress for the 1st Congressional District. And Rebecca, boy, you're hard to nail down these days. I'm so glad I have your personal cell phone number. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm glad you have it too.
Yes. And you know what? I have to say, you know, all the people who are running for office, I have made some wonderful friends, people who are like-minded, like myself, that just enjoying this magnificent planet we call life and just giving back. You know, we all talk about learning and growing older and bolder and giving back to the world. And boy, you are. So talk to us a little bit. The Florida voters weighed in on the ballot Tuesday night, and you are the candidate who's going to be taking on in the incumbent Republican Matt Gaetz. So talk to us about where is the campaign right now.
So we're obviously switching into overdrive right now. We're hiring for a lot of positions, trying to keep it as local as possible, because those are the people who, you know, have their ears to the ground and know best what people need, and to give them that seat at the table. But of course, anybody statewide or nationwide who wants to volunteer with us, we have plenty of roles for that as well, things that can be done virtually. And we're just, you know, getting ready to kick some Matt Gaetz butt.
And we just want to let our listeners know that this segment is paid for by the Rebecca Jones for Florida 1st Congressional District campaign. So we've got that in. So talk to us a little bit. What happened? And I mean, you were on the ballot, then you were off the ballot, then you had to go to court. If you could tell our listeners a little bit what happened to get you to this point, because we're excited for you and we're happy that you are going to be on the ballot in November. For a minute there, my heart had stopped. I'm like, oh no, not Rebecca. And then I'm like, oh God, she's in. So tell us a little bit what happened.
Oh man, that was crazy. So I knew that when I came here to take on, you know, Ron DeSantis' BFF, that there would be some kind of dark-handed, you know, shady backdoor type deal to try to kick us off. And I remember in June telling my husband, I was like, it's kind of weird that we haven't really seen any of that materialize. Well, no, they had it in their back pocket the whole time. So basically, DeSantis' press secretary and some other of my 2.5 year plus Twitter stalkers recruited a candidate who lives in another district, who's never lived here, to run basically a sham campaign that wasn't fundraising, it wasn't campaigning. And right after mail ballots had been printed and were being sent, they filed a lawsuit to remove me from the ballot. Because a year earlier, the day after I was doxxed online with my home address, my phone number, my date of birth, my social security number, my driver's license number, my height, my weight, everything that, or what I said was my height and weight on my driver's license.
Good for you.
Don't tell him the truth, girl. Keep that 10 pounds up or down.
Yeah, pretty much every personal detail you can imagine was released on Twitter. Somebody changed my voter registration. And they waited for a year to pull this. And as soon as ballots were sent, they filed it. And it was successful. It kicked me off the ballot. We filed an appeal, got a stay 5 days later, and then the day before the election, won the appeal on a DeSantis-appointed court 3-0.
Oh,
with
yeah.
Some of the harshest legal language that I have ever heard, condemning that this suit was brought and the way that it was brought and everything. And so I was really only on the ballot free and clear with people knowing that their vote would count for me, assuming they heard that news, for one day. Just
wow.
For one day.
Oh, my God.
And we still blew it out the water.
You did it. You got excellent. Like over 60%. So one of my listeners had sent me a question this morning to have you talk about your background. You grew up in Mississippi and your family, a family of six. Talk to us, because you were one of the first ones in your family to go to college as well. And your parents, boy, they put everything into education and instilling you guys to do the right thing and be the person to fight for what you want.
Yeah. So I was my sister went to college before me. She was the first one in our family. I went to Syracuse. I got a full ride. I went there to be a journalist, investigator, kind of muckraker type, you know, throw me in the worst places in the world and let me tell the stories of the people that no one cares about and make them care about it. My junior year in October, so in the middle of the semester, I had my son, Jackson, and decided that career path probably wasn't appropriate with an infant. And so instead of writing about the world's problems, I decided to become a part of finding the solutions. And so I threw myself completely and entirely into earth science, specifically studying hurricanes, severe weather, and climatology. And I followed that to LSU to get my master's degree.
and then eventually to Florida State, which is what brought me to Florida 6 years ago to start my PhD. And that has been my passion. It's what I was doing at the state when COVID started. And, you know, all four of us, my brothers and sisters, were first-generation college students. And two of us went to top 50 universities, and every single one of us went into public service.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Became a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. She's been teacher of the year twice in Mississippi, both years during COVID. I became a state scientist, and now I guess icky, a politician, but I see that as, a public servant. My younger sister is an ER nurse and has been. She was on the front lines of COVID in New Orleans when it first started. And my younger brother is a police officer. You know, my dad's a truck driver, and my mom worked at the front desk of a Best Western in the middle of nowhere for something like 15 years. And by the time she finished, wasn't even making $11 an hour, because that's how things work.
Yeah. And you watch your parents struggle. So I would think that shaped your future while you went into politics as well.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly never thought about being a politician until my house was raided. And I saw that unless you're one of the people who's writing the laws, you can't really change things. I'd been a public advocate for science for 7 months before that, and I thought I was doing a lot of good. But when it came to having guns pointed at my kids, I realized that unless you have real government authority, there's nothing you can do to stop things like that from happening or to hold the people accountable who did it. And that's when I decided that I was going to be more politically involved. And, you know, it's my family has strong political opinions, but none of us were ever interested in being politicians because we thought they were all a bunch of millionaires and you had to be a millionaire to run for office. And they don't actually care about working people, like my dad, who's a truck driver. And, you know, that's not the world that we lived in. But I was sitting there with this platform and these resources and this kind of, you know, celebrity and thought, you know what? Matt Gaetz is representing an area that's my backyard where I grew up. He doesn't deserve it. And I don't care if I might lose or, you know, I'm going to give him a run for his money.
That's right. And you know,
he has plenty of it. So,
you know, as a scientist who's spent more than a decade studying the earth, how do you feel about the science deniers?
I don't blame a lot of people. And this is something that grew out, you know, that took me time to mature and see, because where I grew up, you know, 15th poorest county in the country, there's a lot of anti-evolution sentiment. Anything that's, you know, against religion is wrong, even if it's science, and science is even evil. And I hated it so much when I was there, but it took getting out, seeing the world, understanding systems to really appreciate why people end up thinking that way. And I don't think it's their fault. I think that it's intentional. I think that it's, especially in the last 2 years, extremely coordinated. And that people are convincing them of these ideas because it helps them, the people in charge, maintain their power and authority, and it even strengthens it. I don't blame someone whose, you know, only TV news station is a Sinclair-owned syndicate, and they're seeing the governor of their state, who they voted for, and the president of the United States, who they believe in, telling them that something is a lie. That's authority telling them that. It's somebody who has, you know, a prominent role in their life, someone they believe in, they voted in, they've invested in, telling them that something is not true, that is. And that is a hard thing, even for people who maybe aren't as susceptible to that kind of influence, to overcome easily. It takes humanizing science, which is something scientists have been notoriously awful at, and saying, look, we're not all meeting in secret dark rooms to try to plan out how we're going to create a one-world government to poison the water or whatever it is that they're telling you that we're doing. They do that. They actually do that. I'm just in a lab most of the time trying to figure out an easier way to keep people from dying. And that's all that I want. And I'm going to tell you the information that's right and let you make up your mind about it. And so I don't judge people who don't know better and who are being influenced by very powerful and very authoritative resources. It's not their fault. We just have to be better at
messaging. We've always talked about messaging, and I think that's one of the biggest problems that Democrats, not just Democrats, but people in general, husbands and wives break, you know, they get divorced over communication. Child and parent, child and teacher, co-workers, people just don't seem to know how to communicate and get a message across that's plain and accurate. And that politicians fall into that category as well.
Yes, and even scientists, when they're trying to be plain and accurate, don't understand. A lot of people who are scientists grew up very affluent. They grew up in circles of society that are not what we would call the masses, you know, like people like how I grew up. if you can't, even if you're explaining it accurately, if you're not making people understand why it impacts their life day to day, it doesn't matter. You know, talking about climate change 2,000 years in the future in terms of sea level rise doesn't impress upon anyone the urgency of confronting the problem. But talking about how, you know, like last hurricane season, each hurricane had 25% more rainfall, which is the reason why storms like Harvey flooded Houston so badly, or, you know, why Dorian sat on top of, you know, the island nations for 3 days straight, you know, pummeling them. That stuff they understand because they saw it, they felt it. And that's been a miscommunication of expertise across time and across fields even. It's about helping people understand, look, if we fix this problem, these problems are also impacted and don't, you know, make life a little easier for you too. That's all we're trying to do.
Right. Well, a lot of people would see the stranded people on a rooftop, but they don't understand how their houses were flooded to begin with and what caused it from the climate, you know. And so you're right. That's what people see in the news is what they hear all the time. And then the political pundits step in to give their bit. But no one actually talks about what's going on with the climate and global warming and how it affects world hunger, your housing, your job, you know, everything else. But, you know,
insurance rate.
Right. So Florida deserves representatives who are honest and care about the people. But oftentimes we see a lot of politicians that use the Bible, use religious texts to keep their masses informed what they want to inform them. How do you plan to be transparent and be an advocate for accountability and transparency in government?
Well, we need a lot of new laws to do that, or I guess the resuscitation of old laws. We need to get rid of Citizens United. The fact that anybody can buy, you know, your representative and you never know about it and tell them what bills to write them and how to push them is antithetical to a people's republic and democracy to begin with. That's the first thing we need to do. Dark money out of politics. We need to make sure that all of the money that we're spending on projects needs to be transparent. There needs to be obligatory studies done with all of these major projects that assess what the, you know, intentional and unintentional costs might be. Things associated with, you know, systems of environmental racism. You want to build that highway. What's the actual community cost? What are we talking about in quality of life impact? Everything that we do should be studied before we do it. I know that sounds like an insane idea, but instead of just throwing money at problems or taking it away, let's study how those bills that we're writing might actually impact people in more than one way, not just the stock market. Most people, their day-to-day life is not affected by the stock market. What it is affected by is stagnant wages or a minimum wage that is, you know, 50% at most of what is livable for most places in this country. Those are the things that we need to be doing. We need
to be homeowners insurance. A lot of people are concerned about their homeowners insurance, and a lot of people can't even afford to renew their policies right now. And again, that is tied to the climate and what's happening with the environment. But we have to find a way to show people why that affects their housing and their bottom line.
Yeah, it does. And even if it doesn't, you don't own a house like me, if you're somebody who's stuck in the renting cycle, that affects you as well. Because the fact is that Florida does have a mechanism to implement rent stabilization in an emergency, and it's not using it. And states across the country are trying to ban things like rent control and stabilization, and there are ways that we can make sure that those things are not banned. Municipalities, local governments have the right to best regulate in the way that their people and their government needs. And this whole authoritarian power grab by people like DeSantis needs to be shut down. Local government knows best what's happening on the ground, and they should be able to make those decisions.
Yeah. What's happening, Rebecca, right now with voting rights and voter registration? Because we're watching, I think there was a video circulating certain pieces of information written about people who feel as though they couldn't participate in voting because they were felons, they had already paid the price, incarcerated, and they're out, and now they're saying, oh, these people were cheating. I mean, if we can't participate in voting, it's not a democracy. So what is your take on voting rights and voter registration right now?
Yeah, I wish that we had Anna Eskenazi in every single part of the state. I'll say that.
She's I know.
Brilliant at, you know, mobilizing people and getting them registered. This was something in the last month that I never thought I would be kind of a champion for, but because I literally had a sham candidate try to steal an election, we had to fight and pay a lot of money just to make people's votes count. There were Democrats running around telling people not to vote because it wouldn't count. Like, if we can't hold our own party accountable for that kind of stuff, we'll never win. will never win. Everyone's vote counts, period. If you are a United States citizen over the age of 18, you have the right to vote. That's what the Constitution requires, and that is all that it requires. Anything above that is voter discrimination and suppression.
Yeah. And how do we hold our media more accountable? We're watching where someone says a lie and it's repeated and repeated and repeated. And before you know it, people that you knew for years with PhDs and doctorate and master's degrees and regular person on the street, they're believing these lies. I mean, how do we hold people who really and truly, you know, God gave us eyes and ears and feet and a tongue to speak? How do we hold people responsible and accountable that what comes out of their mouth is actually the truth? It's so sad what we're watching, that lies are taking hold and they're growing arms and legs, and before you know it, it's the norm.
Well, we're seeing some of that pushback from, like, the Dominion Voting Systems lawsuit.
Good.
But if you're not, like, a giant system, you know, that has billions of dollars, it's very difficult to, let's say, for me, to hold somebody accountable like Mark Caputo, who will just straight up fabricate stories on behalf of DeSantis, and then you have liberals listening to it. You know, it's, I think one of the ways is to repeal Section 230 and make sure that the conduits who are allowing this information to be spread are held accountable, because then you'll see organizations like Twitter start making sure real fast that misinformation on their websites is not propagated. And that's one of the big steps, because we do have a First Amendment and it is very favorable to the press. And there are good reasons why you can't just sue the press every time they say something that's incorrect. You have to prove actual malice. You have to prove that they knew it was wrong, because otherwise you could silence the entirety of the media, like the New York Times and the Miami Herald, just by suing them. And there are protections, and I take those very seriously as somebody who went to school for journalism. But at the same time, Twitter is not journalism. They have a responsibility to the public, if they're going to claim to be a public utility, to make sure that misinformation is not being spread. And I plan to hold Twitter's feet to the fire and maybe even throw them in it a bit to make sure that that's done.
I see Allie wanted to jump in here when you spoke about the dark money. Her head went up and down and sideways. Go ahead, Allie.
Well, I was thinking more about the fact that when you get my age, then you are instantly a skeptic. The newest word now is Karen, I think. But, if you're a skeptic, then you don't jump to that must be the truth because they said it out loud on TV. You don't jump to that anymore. You say, oh, that's ridiculous. That can't be. So I think some skepticism in our life would be good. And a little bit earlier than in my 70s would be a nice thing. So.
No, I absolutely agree. But, you know, if I've been known for anything, it's not being afraid to say the quiet part out loud.
Yeah,
I
hope you don't.
That's one of the reasons we like you.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Rebecca Jones. She is a candidate for a congressional district here, Florida's first congressional district. And we're speaking about her issues and why she decided to run for office. So, Rebecca, environment, opportunities, education, they're all part of your platform. Right now, we're watching a lot of people that are talking about the student loans. What is your take on what's happening with the student loans and who's going to benefit and who won't benefit from the what President Biden just did?
So the 10-20 split forgiveness based on your income and your Pell status. As somebody who had a full ride but still had to take out nearly $150,000 of student loans I did have a child during college and did not let that hold me back. So I did take out what I needed to. Went to grad school and then my PhD, I have a lot of loans. $20,000 as a Pell Grant recipient making $150,000, which is what most public service employees make, less than that, is a drop in the bucket. I'm glad that it's going to give the relief that it is, because it is a profound impact on people like my sister who went to public universities and then public service. But I don't understand why we haven't canceled all student loan interest, because there should not be profit off of, you know, underprivileged people getting an education. We should be encouraging it, not charging it fees. So the first thing I would like to see, although there are multiple things, is to cancel student loan interest, because a lot of the people complaining who took out loans 20 years ago, their interest rate wasn't 7.8% compounded like mine was in 2008. So that needs to go immediately. But my one sister cried when she found out, because she's been a public school teacher in Mississippi making less than like $40,000 a year for over 10 years and had about $18,000 left. So she's free. She's free.
Well, I spoke with a hospice nurse too, who was very excited that she's going to get a little break. And I'm like, why not? you're here taking care of everybody's loved ones, especially at the end of life. I'm happy you're getting a break.
Well, and it's not for the Pell Grant folks. It's one thing, but even I'm with you on the interest rate, because I have friends that they're doctors and they took out really high interest rate loans because that's all they could get back then, and after paying for 10 years, their balance was still really close to what they took out. It was like the entire time it was interest. So it's like these loan sharks that were, that's who should be taken care of. Taken care of in your kind of way of taking care of them, Rebecca.
Right. So with the remaining,
throw them into the swamp.
With the remaining couple of minutes we have, Rebecca, so if you meet someone on the street or in the elevator, or I'm your friend and I've been talking to people about voting for you as well, tell us what's your 30-second elevator speech. Give us your speech right now for us to share with our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
So ignore for a moment that I'm running against Matt Gaetz, a man under investigation by the FBI and the Department of Justice for sex trafficking underage teenage boys and girls, who's done nothing for Northwest Florida, who mocks our military, and really is just kind of like stain on the, underwear that is Northwest Florida. I'm someone who's already proven to the entire world that I can't be bought, I can't be intimidated, I can't be threatened, I can't even be held at gunpoint to do something that I think is wrong. And those are the types of people who don't come from money, who have worked for everything that they have, who will listen to you, and not only listen to you, bring you with them so that your voice is heard, is what we need in Congress. We have too many out-of-touch millionaires and elitists who don't care about us, whose laws that they're passing will never impact their lives. And it's about time we have someone who has been living with those consequences of those laws their entire life, making the laws in the future.
Yeah.
So you can visit us online at visitjones2022.com. Of course, we're running against one of the most prolific fundraisers in all of Congress, unfortunately. So we need money, we need help, we need volunteers. Anything and everything that you can do, believe me, it's appreciated.
Right. And your district, Florida First, has the highest percentage of veterans of any congressional district in the United States?
Yes, it does.
I did not know that. So give us your website one more time, because I know you need people to volunteer. We know you need money, and we'd like to see you elected in Florida First.
VoteJones2022.com.
Ellen, what a great segment.
That fantastic. Was fabulous.
Yes, and make sure that you visit Rebecca's website, because there's a lot of other great information. I'm sure that you have events coming up of folks that you'll be able to meet. And you want to make sure that you get to all of those, because this is certainly a trailblazer.
Right,
Florida.
Rebecca, and we would love to have you in Brevard too if we can. We'll have to arrange something, maybe have you sit down for a couple.
Well, we just
tea
found out
us.
She's only renting, so we can get her over here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Our rent is
just
probably,
come move to Brevard.
Yeah,
County.
Yeah. Girl, you know what? What we need? We need people like you who are going into politics because you care about Main Street. You care about people. Their education, their wages, their jobs, where they live, the environment.
You guys have got somebody over there, Anthony Ants.
That's
You've
right.
got someone
That's true.
Who That's true. I think is a better person than me to run, who's been through, the same similar childhood,
awesome.
Even tougher than I have, and he's over there, kicking some butt. So
well, good plug for our friend Anthony Ants as well. Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, 1 p.m. each and every Monday right here Eastern Standard Time. Please join us each and every week, where we have fantastic new guests every week, and we'll see you next Monday.